The current estimate was that there were nearly 35,000 human beings left on Earth. An astonishing number that, the council agreed, was far too great for any one town. The groups were mostly survivors who had withdrawn to mountainous places, natural fortresses their forebears had mined, as in the case of the Rockies. But some were in the frozen north in which the cyclos had had no interest, and some were simply overlooked strays. The duty of the council, as they saw it, was to preserve the tribal and local customs and government and install over all of it a clan system, appointing local leaders as clan chiefs. The coordinators spread the news and were extremely welcome and successful. The hard-worked pilots were ferrying in chiefs and visitors and simply anyone who got on their passenger planes. If there were too many going or coming, they simply told them to wait until next week, and that was fine. But there was no really organized forward motion. Local control of the tribes was often slack. Some had retained literacy in their language, some had not. Most of them were poor, half-starved, ragged. The one incredible fact that after over 1,000 years there was freedom from cyclos, even if possibly temporary, united them in a wave of hope. They had once gazed from their mountains on the ruins of cities they dared not visit. They had looked upon fertile plains and great herds they dared not benefit from. They had seen no hope whatever for their dying race. And then, suddenly, men from the sky, speaking their language, telling them of the remarkable feats that led to possible freedom, had brought them soaring hope and reburgeoning pride in their race. The Council's existence, they accepted. They joined it and, with radios parked on rocks and in huts, communicated with it. They all had one question. Was the Johnny McTyler, of whom the coordinator spoke, a part of this Council? Yes, he was. Good. No more questions. But the council well knew that Johnny was not an active part of the council now. Completely aside from the political significance of it, every council member was himself personally concerned for Johnny. There were all kinds of things happening over the world. Most of the actions taken without even informing the council. People were moving about. A group of South Americans with baggy pants and flat leather hats, swinging wide lariats and riding almost as well as Johnny once did, had suddenly walked off a plane with their women and lariats and saddles and said, through their Spanish-speaking Scot coordinator, that they were llaneros, or gauchos, and they knew cattle, but would find out what to do with buffalo, and were taking over the management of the vast herds to preserve them and to make sure the people at the compound and base were properly fed. Two Italians from the Italian Alps had shown up and taken over the commissary after making peace with the old women. Five Germans from Switzerland had shown up and opened a factory in Denver to salvage and service man equipment such as knives and tools, you name it. And if you sent it to them, they would make it shiny and working and send it back. This put a freight line into an already overburdened pilot zone. Three Basques showed up and simply started making shoes. The difficulty was that Basque as a language had been omitted by the coordinators, and the shoemakers were learning English and cyclo while they turned out shoes from the hides the South Americans dedicatedly furnished them. Many others came in. Everybody wanted to help and simply helped.